Well, we're back. We're going to go behind the kitchen doors again and see what's really happening in the world of restaurants. Just the stuff out front, but who's paying attention to what's coming out? And what is coming out these days? That's the question we have as Chef Pascal returns to us from across the sea.
Hey, Bert, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You went back to the motherland, to the home country here, to France.
Motherland, mother food.
Mother food.
Yes.
I'm fascinated to see. I'll full disclosure, I've always wanted to go to France and to Italy both, but I've never been to the continent.
Well, you're getting closer. Having me here,
I feel like it. I feel like I already know exactly here. And you're going to tell. So you just came back. When did you return? Are you still jet lagged?
Yeah, kind of the end of the jet lag. But I'm sorry to say, but older you get, the longer the jet lag is.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you're gone for almost a couple of weeks, it takes
a while to readjust.
A week to recover. And but no, I'm fine. Now I have all the memories coming to me.
Ah, yes.
And that's what we want to talk about today.
All right. So give us an itinerary where you went this time in France.
I spent mostly the time in my village home. Village.
How do you spell the name of your town here?
Oh, it's a little village called Notre Dame de Bondeville.
Notre Dame something? What?
Yeah, de Bondeville. The Notre Dame of Bondeville. And a lot of village in France have the name finished by ville. Ville means city. Ville.
Okay.
And so.
And is this literally what I picture, a little quaint village with little old stone buildings and stuff, or in cobblestone streets?
Every region of France has different style of housing, and my area is more like red bricks.
Red bricks, okay.
And some regions are stone, some regions are more wood and wood beams. Mine, actually, way before... all the houses were made with beams and then with a clay filling inside between the beams. Mm. But mine was a little bit more recent. It's only 120
years old. 120
years old. Only.
Wow. Only. Yeah. It was a new one. One of the newer houses in town here. Yeah. That's the new section over here. It was only 100 years old.
Exactly.
So what, and is it really a village? Is it like 100 people, 500, 1,000 people?
No. Still, I think, when I'm there, it's 20,001 or 20,002.
That's not huge, but I mean, Irvine, how many people live in Irvine?
But because this is in a suburb of a big city called Rouen. A famous city, Rouen.
Isn't that where one of the giant cathedrals was the biggest?
The beautiful cathedral in Rouen. This is where Joan of Arc was executed.
Joan of Arc, exactly.
And a lot of Claude Monet lived there, a lot of French writers, Colbert.
And this is all in the area of Normandy over by the coast there somewhere?
Yeah. Why the Seine River, from Paris,
right,
goes down. Do a kind of a little snake thing, and then pass by Rouen, go up to the channel with like the ocean between England and France.
Right. Okay. Well,
so we were right in the middle of the D-Day, German invasion. My dad was involved, and got to the French Resistance, the whole thing. So, yeah. So right there's a lot of history. A
lot of history there. And you were telling me off air, own the family home? It's in your hands, and it sits there mostly empty? It's just this little, nobody can sell it, nobody can do anything with it or rent it?
It's memories.
Yeah,
so exactly. Many memories. It's like a little piece of jewelry that you don't want to let go.
Yeah. Is it a big house? Is it a little quaint house?
No, it's kind of, we call it a track house.
Right.
But,
French style.
French style, but, it's well maintained. People coming daily and So always look forward to go there.
So when you, how often do you go? Once or twice a year, a couple times a year?
As much as I can, you know. Yeah. With my my troubles lately, I was not able to go as often as I want. But okay, let's talk about Cully. One of the reasons I like to go to France is to make sure they still do some good food there.
That was really the point of the whole show
because
here.
I tell you what, a few years ago, and I'm sure the people who travel France find out that the food was not as good as it used to be.
It was not as good.
Because it became more a corporate operation for large restaurants and bistro and cafe and,
McDonald's and the same stuff we see everywhere.
Everywhere. McDonald's used to take beautiful monument location, and nobody stopped them. And so,
stop!
But the good thing, you can go to McDonald's have a glass of wine. So they have a bar.
They have a wine in McDonald's.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's different. All right.
And but anyway,
it's France.
It's France.
So, yes, that's the key question today. I could ask you forever because I'm just curious about what life is like there and what it, and all that where you grew up. It's such a different world that most of us have never seen. I've never seen. I've never been there. However, the point of the show is cooking. And this is the motherland where you learned to cook, mm-hmm. where you developed your passion for it, and you picked up your mother's recipes and learned at her hands, and then all the famous chefs you studied under Paul Bocuse and others and stuff here through the years where you picked all that up. You're saying for a while there, France fell into the Western trap. It's just big corporations. It's all just...
Well, I have to say, France always look at the U.S. as a business model.
Sure.
And so the French love the U.S. They love to go to the U.S. For them, it's still a dream.
Disneyland. It's still Disneyland.
Yeah. But, you know, these big American institutions, I don't say they take over the world, but they take over the tradition of the old world.
And we've projected our culture back to the old world, where for most of us, we were trying to imitate, remember, interpret French food, Italian food, German food, Asian food, still, but... We don't realize in return we have the movies they listen to, the movies they watch, the music they listen to, the fashion, and the way they eat has probably become more fast food and more Americanized.
Yes, but this is one thing we're going to start to talk about food.
Okay.
I do see France still have great cuisine, great food, and with more of a globalizing gastronomy.
So it isn't just uniquely French anymore. They're bringing in other influences.
Well, yes, because of the trend, really the trend, is to have young chefs creating their own cuisine.
Right.
And the young chef travel. The young chef get influence on TV. You have a TV show, cooking demonstration,
right.
Like that, from chefs from all over the world. Others from India, from Africa, from Middle East and China. They all have, even if they cook in France or a French restaurant, they all put their influence of their origin, of their roots, mm-hmm. into French cuisine. So it's, for me, it is the biggest turnaround of French cuisine. That now you find chefs that really are twisting the cuisine to their origin, but they don't forget that they are in France.
So the two things I've learned from this takeaway all the time we've been doing this show is I guess I hadn't realized that French cooking, the approach to French cooking, what would you say it is, the fundamentals of French cooking,
yes,
really kind of form the basis of modern Western cooking in general. If you're a chef anywhere, if you make anything, mm-hmm. learning to cook the French way, to prepare the sauces and to do all the stuff and the whole approach to it, can be kind of the foundation. But as we've seen happen here with French food, it's not just strictly following the tradition anymore, the same old thing for 100 years. They're taking and they're improvising. They're taking and adding to it. They're taking and in the process, they're using French foundations to cook. Mm-hmm. And then in return, they're bringing new flavors, new spices, and new dishes into the repertoire.
There are things that we talk and we'll never give up on that. Some great chef like Auguste Escoffier and
Escoffier, the one that first wrote about this, and we all talked about it, what were the 1800s, early 1900s?
He became chef at the Ritz in Paris.
Right.
And he created a definition of the mother sauce.
Mother sauces. What are the five? You've said before, are there five mother sauces or four?
Let me see if I don't forget. My wife is listening.
I forget. You're supposed to tell me. You've told me before and I forget.
Yeah. Tomato sauce.
Right.
Bechamel. Hollandaise.
Hollandaise.
And then you have Espanol with base on the stock. Mm-hmm. And Chris, my wife, she's missing one.
Let's go through it one more time. So we got the tomato sauces. We always associate that with Italian food, French food.
Bechamel.
What is bechamel?
Bechamel is a base of butter, flour, and then boiling milk that you make.
Okay, so these are like the roux sauces.
And then they have a velouté. Velouté is like a little chicken stock or vegetable stock that you thicken with a starch in it.
Right.
And then you have the Espagnol, with like a beef or a veal stock that you finish with a tomato puree. Yeah? Then you have a tomato sauce with a little bit. And then you have the Hollandaise. So these sauces.
And Hollandaise is made up of what? I've tasted it. I just don't remember what it is.
Emulsion of an egg yolk with clarified butter that you incorporate.
Because it has a butter substance to it. Here.
These five sauces are the key sauce to start, and from each five sauce, you go like a spider web maker.
And the foundation of making the sauces, is there cuisine out there? I'd be hard-pressed to think of anything. Even Asian cuisines, I don't know anything about African cuisines, but all European cuisines have some kind of chicken stock, sick chicken soup. Every culture I've ever heard of, Jewish culture, Irish culture, Thai culture, Asian culture, is a Thai.
They do pho. The key to have a good pho is to have a good stock.
Right.
And if you have to make your own stock, then you have a good fire.
And that seems to be a foundation of everybody's cuisine. And so you're saying using these foundational items, which really came out of poor people, ordinary people. Just what did you have around? You had chickens, you had eggs, you had butter, and you used this to make things.
So you have that, and then the flavor come from wherever in the world or wherever you are, the spices.
Right. And that's where you're saying that people are bringing these spices, now Indian spices or Vietnamese spices, other spices into French cooking. Mm-hmm. They're not just trying to imitate and do the same as Escoffier and all these others laid down a century or more ago.
If you're a good chef, you have to know all these basics.
And why did French become the basic? Why not Germans? You've had Bruno in here. He'd argue the Italians are the foundational cooking, but
no, he's right at about 40%.
Or the Spanish, you're saying even that they're even the foundational.
No, everybody influences everybody, because the cuisine changed about 300-400 years ago when people start to have floating boats. Going to Africa, from Africa.
Hopefully it's a floating boat, not a sinking boat.
No, I was going to say floating device, because those were very special boats. But going from Portugal, from Spain to Africa, to South America.
And bringing back spices they'd never heard of. And then India
and then end up in Louisiana.
Right.
Okay. And so that's
Cajun
why.
Cajun cooking.
That's why we call Louisiana New Orleans.
Yeah, Creole, Cajun.
And Creole cuisine because of the influences. And actually, I learned today that, you know, the gumbo.
Gumbo, I love gumbos.
Basically, supposed to have okra.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is a southern vegetable.
I saw a French chef this morning on French TV was doing a French gumbo with a lot of okras. Mm-hmm. And so I said, hey.
Which is not something they grow and probably see in France. I don't know what okra is or where it grows, but it's a southern vegetable.
Yeah. But it comes a lot from the, you can find them. That chef actually was from Congoville. He came from Congo, the French Congo country in Africa.
Right.
And apparently they grow okra there.
Hmm.
And so all these influences. So to a point that now young chef here want to put their own identity to fine dining, to their cuisine, depend on their origin or their background, and some of them just go with the trend.
And I wonder, here's my question then. So if it keeps it alive, I get that. You're not just imitating what Escoffier wrote down in his books 100 years or more ago. You're not trying to just do the same thing over and over again. There's a variation now on a theme. But if it changes too much, can you recognize it anymore? Is it so different that it's not French anymore? Maybe the foundation is there, but the taste and the flavor and the presentation is now filled with so many other world influences that it's no longer there. And at the same time, do they lose classic dishes? You make beef bourguignon. I've never seen beef bourguignon on a menu in 20 years.
Okay. So, if you're really looking for a specific way to dine,
right,
you can find it. And this is what I did in this trip. I wanted to try cuisine from new young chef.
Right.
All right. So, find one that she is actually American.
In France?
In France, in Paris. And she's from Illinois, and she worked in California as well, in San Francisco. And she opened a restaurant called Chez Cali, and she do kind of a mix French and California, so she call it Pacific Mediterranean cuisine.
Pacific Mediterranean cuisine.
And it's very interesting because she put all these influences in it and some, but the thing is she's also the whole restaurant, our restaurant is vegetarian.
That's the influence of California in particular.
Yeah.
More and more vegetables, more and more fresh, fewer and fewer butter. All that stuff that started with Alice Waters and all those people, they started eliminating the butter from French cuisine, which was a foundation for all this.
And so she, our cafe, it's a little bistro, maybe 40 seats, and it's doing very well. And you don't think it's French or American, you think it's just what today's food should be.
Right.
And everything is local, organic, and do a nice lunch menu, but also do a Saturday and Sunday brunch, and because you can have eggs or you can have some.
I had that experience years ago when I went to New Orleans for the first time. Nolens, as they say. I'm going to say New Orleans. It's Nolens. It all sort of rolls together. I'm down in Nolens, and I went to a Vietnamese French restaurant in the French Quarter.
Yeah.
And I thought, at first I thought this is too weird. I'm going there to taste French food. I want the classic stuff I can't get anywhere else. This, where else to get it in America but in the French Quarter in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Once I got that out of my head that this isn't Disneyland. This isn't just a tourist trap where they're just doing it for the tourists over and over again. It's a living, breathing space, and they're growing and changing just like the rest of us are. It was wonderful. It was fascinating.
Yeah, because, you know, in New Orleans,
New Orleans,
they have a very good spices, you know, and thanks to he put that on the map.
Bam, as he'd say.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. And, a little kick, but this was influenced also by the old French islands from close by on Havana, Cuba, you know.
And Haiti, all these places where they grew.
So really, the cuisine, like chef, are traveling more.
Yes, and they're integrating that into more of a world culture, world cuisine. So you can see the foundation there. You can see this is a variation of some French dish.
But
it has a lot of different flavors and the things added to it.
So you have these young chefs that have been traveling, but they dream also, like the one I met, she was dreaming to have a restaurant in France, in Paris, even though she's really American. And he works. And he works on the other way, too. You have a lot of young chefs that come to California to see what's going on and see what the influences. And here we have also this type of influences, except that we don't have much culinary roots.
We have no roots. Well, our whole roots go back, you know, 2 days. You know, California, yes, we have some missions from the 1700s, but most California culture was created post-World War II and probably in the 70s or 80s or whatnot.
So here, when you want to create your own cuisine, your own identity, you have to improvise. You have to dig in and say, okay, what I want to be, because you cannot say, oh, I'm a Californian restaurant. No?
So how would you define, I'll give you my answer after yours, or maybe I'll give you my answer first, and then you can tell me, you can correct me. What would you, if you were traveling around the world, and you said, and you met somebody in India or Africa or Asia, they said, it's California cuisine. I hear about it, see people talk about it. What defines California? What characteristics, if you see that California cuisine has to have what?
Actually, California cuisine became more famous once the French start to do a cuisine called Nouvelle Cuisine.
Nouvelle, new, right.
Because
that's what I first heard.
Nouvelle Cuisine is a lighter approach of cuisine.
Right.
Sometimes it was too extreme. But and also, Nouvelle Cuisine has a lot of Asian influence. A lot of French chefs went to Japan.
And we're on
Kyoto.
The Pacific Rim here, so we've got influences.
But even French chefs traveled there and brought back different style of cuisine. Okay, one perfect example. Here we eat sashimi. Bigger.
Sashimi, right. Raw fish.
Raw fish, slice, and you season it with some dipping sauce. But in Tahiti,
French colony,
we call it poisson cru. I mean, raw fish. It's a raw tuna. The difference, it's marinated. First, we wash it in either in ocean water or salted water, and then we put lemon and coconut milk.
Coconut milk, okay.
So good. That's poisson cru. A touch of ginger if you want to. And then you go to Hawaii. They call it poke.
Poke, exactly.
And then poke.
This is marinated in something.
There's difference. Poke
it's
is
not totally raw, it's marinated in like
spice and lime and ginger.
Which cooks it a little bit. Yeah, slightly.
Cook it. And then now they call it in France more of an Italian name to it or a Latino name. They call it crudo.
Crudo, I've heard that.
No, they call it crudo. So crudo is a big deal. So you see, even the test and the preparation have new names because of the preparation itself.
So if you look at the fine dining around the world, I'm talking about cuisine that, you know, is worthy of Michelin stars and whatnot, is it still mostly French style or French influenced, or is it more and more Asian fish, raw ingredients, vegetarian stuff? I don't know if there's other African influences yet, or anything, Indian influences.
It's all of it, actually, because of the demand. I think the guests of newest restaurant want something new. Want something.
That's me. I always say, "What's the thing? What's your favorite dish?" And I always say, "The one I haven't had yet."
Yes.
I'm always looking for the new.
And so they want to surprise you and give you an experience.
Exactly.
But going back to Paris or France, if you really want to experience real French cuisine, and unless you know a French family and you get invited, you can find still little cafe where now more than ever they are going to make sure they do a perfect beef bourguignon.
Beef bourguignon. Is that, that's just to me the epitome of classic French cuisine, and I never see it anywhere.
And a perfect veal blanquette with like veal cooking with a mushroom cream sauce.
I can rattle on. These are dishes I grew up as a child hearing of. I don't even know what they are. What's coq au vin? That's another one.
Coq au vin is like a beef bourguignon that is cooked chicken that's been marinated in red wine overnight, and then you cook it in that red wine sauce with mushroom and
beef
bacon.
Beef bourguignon is what?
Same style. It's like cubes of beef.
Cubes. It's cut up cubes. Yeah.
Cubes of beef that cook in a very slow cook, and cook for a couple of hours slowly. Mm-hmm. So
simmer.
Very tasty.
The French cuisine always seems to have a lot of simmering and reduction and time-consuming techniques.
Well, that was even if every home. You had chef always said before, and things changed, that a restaurant chef has to be a male.
Has to be a what?
A male, a man.
Oh, a man, of course, right.
Yeah,
can't have women in the back.
No,
there.
Don't say, of course.
Of course.
You're going to be in trouble.
Of course.
And now there's more and more.
Mom can cook at home, but when it gets professional,
exactly,
it's got to be a man.
That's my point. The home family cooking, there was always something stewing on the corner of the stove.
That's true.
You know? That came
all day, the soup, the stock, the something.
Well, that came from back to the Henry the Fourth.
Henry the Fourth. I have to go look up who Henry the Fourth was.
Henry the Fourth declared that every Sunday, people should have a pot au feu or chicken cooked in a broth with vegetables above the fireplace inside the fire.
Chicken cooking on the pot.
Hanging on the pot. And
how many Southern songs is Jerry Lee Lewis singing? And I got chicken cooking in the pot.
Yeah. And so it's like a Sunday night dinner, you know,
right.
Gathering. And it's called a pot au feu. But also, that gives you a chance for the next following couple of days to have wonderful broth.
But this idea of simmering it, does that
yeah,
the slow cooking?
Slow cooking.
Who was it? I just read.
Long
who,
cooking.
Who was the one of the famous apostles of slow cooking and wrote all these? He just died somewhere here. The guy, one of the gurus of the whole slow cooking movement. I forgot his name. I have to go look it up. I was going to mention it to you.
Slow food was an Italian.
Yes, he was Italian, right?
Yeah, was an Italian philosophy of dining only, living for food, was taking time. And I mean also cooking local. And so that part of you also, the influence was to make sure any vegetable you put in the pot is from your own growth, your own garden.
Clearly. Locally
so,
sourced,
so,
farm to table.
So when you say French food is fattening, that's not true, because if you really eat real French food, it's natural, it's fresh, it's...
I always grew up thinking of French food as very rich, heavily, lots of sauces,
it's an image.
Hollandaise, that stuff. So I picture heavy sauces, lots of cream and butter, and then along came Alice Waters and all the other people that became part of the Nouveau movement, and they said, strip it down to basics, let's get rid of a lot of the butter and the cream, let's get rid of the heavy sauces, and let's go back to lighter, simpler dishes.
Except there's always that American twist that they all did California pizzas. And, pizza is not that healthy for you.
No.
Pizza is basically flavored bread.
Exactly, with stuff thrown on top. All right, so that's what I picture. And then that Nouveau Cuisine fell out of style. I think, to me, here's my answer. California, if we've contributed anything to the world, and I think we have now, I think there is California cuisine. I think it has spread back to the mother countries.
Well,
and influenced them.
Are we not limited to California? I will say it's global cuisine.
Well, yeah, and I guess that's my point. California is a reflection of its global character.
Well, California is always ahead of time.
And we're a mixture of everything. We are the global melting pot.
And I tell you one big point on all the young chefs that are listening and watching today. A lot of them regret to not have the classical French training of cooking.
Yeah.
Because... as you say, like the bays are there. Once you know all the bays, and then you can have fun.
Then you can improvise, right. Well, it's like the same thing. I grew up around music a lot, and I knew a number of people who went to music school and became successful musicians. And it's the same. Burt Bacharach, the great composer, once said that. So, he said, in order to break the rules, you first got to know them.
Yeah, so going back, if you really want to go to France and experience real French cuisine, you can find your cafe. I find one right in the middle of Paris.
Okay.
And I've been walking by two, three, four.
Do you just walk around or do you?
I walk around and look what's going on. And because if you ask your concierge at the hotel, most of them are going to send you to a tourist place. I don't want that. All the place that we recommend, go to a cafe or brasserie, everybody has a steak tartare, everybody has onion soup, everybody has
escargot.
So it's like a copycat menu.
Right.
And when they look
at... it's the Disneyland version of France.
When they look at you and how you converse with your guests, and there's... right away, they give you an English version of the menu. No, I want the French menu.
I don't even know what they're saying.
I know. So I find that a little cafe that in the old way, with a couple of little boutiques, very low-key, and play with a chalkboard, and say the special today is one day there was a wrap veal loaf in veal scallopini and then baked for hours, so it's so tender. And then this is where I have my best veal blanquette, so we went back there twice.
So you don't just go talk to the experts or talk to the concierge and say, where should I go? You want to walk out where the people are and see what's really happening.
For me, dining is an adventure.
Yeah,
me too. You have to get the feeling of the place. And then if you see this small and quaint and the way, you have all the staff dressed up like a uniform or thing like that. No, they're just... No, it's like somebody's home.
I haven't traveled the world, but I've traveled a great deal in the U.S. I've been to all 50 states and several times. And when I go someplace in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, Michigan, Montana, I don't want to see the same stuff I had at home. I want to see what's the local produce, what's the local fish, what's the local scene, what's the local thing. And sometimes it's hard to find because
it's
more
hard to find. Even when I was touristing California,
yeah.
Of course, I have to take Route 66.
Right.
So
I'm
going to find a little cafe where I can have the best burger in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Go look for it. No, it's not easy.
Not easy to find. Because more and more it has turned into corporate commodity, mm-hmm. the same music, the same food,
yeah.
the same style.
And then you're hungry, and then suddenly you have to serve at Burger King.
I remember the one and only time I went to Ireland, went with my parents. We're all very Irish, and we're going to go back to the mother country here one time. And we're in middle of Dublin, and we'd had some terrible food a couple of times. I hope it's better, but in the 80s, Irish food was... Yeah, I see why there's no Irish restaurants. It was very bland, very salty, very English-style food. And this is a brand new McDonald's.
Well, it has to be salty, because you can drink more stuff.
Well, that's exactly right. So, and I hate the Midwest. I grew up, everything was salty, and if I never taste salty food again, it'd be too soon. So we're in the middle of Dublin, and a brand new Burger King had opened up. This is the early 80s, so it was still pretty novel. And we were so thrilled to go have, finally, a food we can
real
recognize.
Food.
Real food.
I've been raised on that.
Yeah, and I thought, how terrible. We're here, and we're just getting a burger.
Yeah. Why don't you have an Irish stew on the
something
on the Irish pudding, full of grease,
So, but anyway,
that's a little restaurant. It's called the La Boutique des Vins. I mean the little boutique of wine, and very one small room, then another small room, another small room. The owner work a table once, boom boom, back and forth. They have a dummy waiter. They bring the food up from the basement, actually, it was so special because I became a little friend with it, because of course I need to communicate with the owner, and he gave us a tour of the cave.
To go down in the
cave.
They have
a cave.
Is that where they keep the wine?
More, they keep the wine there, but also. Sometimes you can dine in the cave.
In the cave?
And then he showed us a wall that was built in World War II to hide the wine.
Sure.
And this cave showed us the connection that the cave was communicating with another place across the street on the ground.
Yeah.
So they were building all this thing so they can hide the French resistance people.
And, exactly.
And then maybe...
Kind of like going to Rome to see the catacombs where the Christians prayed and away from prying eyes so they could continue down in the cave.
Yeah, and then when they had bombs coming to down, also they could hide poor Jews that tried to hide so they don't take the family away. So it was very touching. You go to a little street restaurant, a little alley, and
you wouldn't picture this, all that underground.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing.
So you're saying French food is still alive and well?
Yeah. You have to look for it. You can open a guide, but you really know if you Google, you can find things, but the best way is to walk around. I do the same thing in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not going to listen to somebody say, oh, go there, go there. No, I just walk around. And then big city. Talking about big city, and we talk about food. Let's talk about bars.
Bars? Well, that's right up. I'm Irish. Now you really got my interest here.
Yeah.
I had a bar for a number of years.
Yeah, but your bar is more like a pub.
Yes. I love a big, giant oak bar that everybody sits at with big displays behind it.
Oh, they used to have that at the Oak Room in New York.
The Oak Room, it was one of my favorite places where all the great writers used
but
to go hang
also,
out.
But also, talking about the writers, we love to go to a place where Ernest Hemingway used to go in Paris. You know, Ernest Hemingway loved food.
Yes.
He loved his drinks.
He loved his drinks.
And he used to have his routine from one bar to another. I don't
like
know.
Like the famous Harry's Bar? Where was Harry's Bar? That was in Rome or something? Or is that
no, Harry's Bar. There's an Harry's Bar in Venice, but it's not the real Harry's Bar. I was going to tell you, there's a Harry's Bar in Paris.
Oh, there is.
It's fabulous.
I don't know why. It's just a place that he frequented, and now it's famous. Yeah,
yeah. It's famous, and but the other bar that's famous was Bar Hemingway at the Ritz. But he didn't go there. He used to go to another place at the hotel. The name is going to come back to me. But
we've all been on the
Bar des Ambassadeurs. And it's, let's see.
Does that help you remember to sing a song here?
Yeah, I'm French. Oui.
Da, 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 da. Let's see.
But
when I'm trying to remember, I don't sing. That doesn't help me remember.
Well, I fill up the blank.
You know? Fill in the blanks.
And so
Americans go.
I'm sure my wife is
she's screaming at you right now. She's saying, "How can you forget all this? You forgot one of the five basic French sauces. You forgot the name of the place."
No. I didn't do that bad. So it's a famous hotel. It's right next to the Louvre on the garden.
Yeah.
And there's Bar des Ambassadeurs. And these places, they are fantastic bartender mixologist.
A really great bar is a mixologist. It's an experience as they make a concoction in front of you.
And we became friends. My wife is sending me a
message. She said,
Le Crillon Hotel. Yes. Hotel Crillon. Thank you, Chris. We became friends from the top chef, who was one of the top mixologists in the world. There was a mixologist Bar Hemingway at the Ritz, and now he's taking retirement, I think. And I didn't know, I never put things together. You know what's his name?
No.
Tom Collins.
His name is Tom Collins, like the famous drink?
He created it.
No.
Yes, he did.
He created it? Tom Collins is named after him. Okay.
And he won one of the world's best cocktails. So, amazing.
A classic.
Very classic. So.
Well, I love the fact that it's been happening for 20 years now, how classic cocktails from the 40s and 50s and the 20s have come back, and now every bar, everywhere I go, from little to big, has a whole list of crazy cocktails, because it started when I had a bar in the 80s. People are drinking less. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to drink less, how am I going to make money? I'm not selling you cheap multiple glasses of wine, cheap multiple glasses of beer. That's not working anymore. I'm not selling you a pitcher of beer or something. I'm selling you an expensive cocktail that with a lot of ingredients, take some show and flair to it, and you'll pay $15 or $20 for that because you're only going to have one or two.
But, yes, and, you know, if I drink, I drink because I want something good.
Yes.
I don't drink...
To get loaded.
I don't like to drink large volume of beer.
I don't either, really.
But you can sip a nice little cocktail.
That's where I'm not Irish, because most Irish love to drink in consumption. I don't like to drink. I'm a very small drinker, and what I drink, I'm only going to have one or two, and I want it to have a lot of flavor to it.
So I want to give a little warning also.
Okay. We're down to the last minutes. You're going to leave us on a warning?
Give me 5 minutes.
All right.
And then French brasseries are large cafes that used to be open 24/7.
Right.
Well, now the hours are shrinking. But very classic cuisine, but you don't get full because some of them are tourist traps.
Yeah.
All right. And
I'll bet there's lots of tourist traps. I bet there's lots of places only exist for Americans or Germans or whatever.
They all corporate now. And they have a central kitchen and they distribute to all their locations.
But they pretend to be
what
you're looking for.
But you still find places like. It's not cheap. Next to the Opera of Paris is Café de la Paix. Café de la Paix is an old classic place where, if you go see like Maxim, Midnight in Paris. You know, there was the Incas, but still.
You're rattling off all these famous names of places, Maxine's and stuff.
Yeah, it's still high class.
Right.
High class service and high class food. And I had to go there with my wife because they have a fantastic oyster bar. And the oyster bar is not inside.
I love
oysters.
The
oyster bar is on the sidewalk.
Oh, wow.
No, well, it's closed, but still on the sidewalk. You can see it when you walk by. And so I say, oh, I need to have my oysters. And
I love
even
oysters.
In Rouen, we have a fish shop, a seafood shop, that in the back of the shop, there you can sit down and enjoy some fresh seafood and shellfish. Mm-hmm. So I need to have my oysters and my...
You and me both.
My langostinos. You know.
That is, to me, the greatest... God's greatest gift to food in the world are shellfish.
Yeah.
Oysters, clams, lobster, crab.
No, even though now we cannot manipulate the way we grow them, but it was natural food.
Right.
And still raised in natural environment.
And again, at least the way I consume it, it's just in a little broth or something. It's you don't bury it and cover it and
No, we eat them warm.
Raw, yeah. Right.
And then,
but if they're well, like they're steamed a little broth or something.
Well, that's the American that bake them. You know, so.
That's a,
so. But but you know, there's also different grades, different location, and you can taste the saltiness is different because of the origin too.
Yeah,
and the texture.
I'll bet.
So, also is my.
I found
oyster will be my last meal.
Me too. Except I don't want I don't want oysters from Louisiana. I'm so disappointed every time I've been to Louisiana.
I don't want Gulf oysters. I'm sorry.
I don't either.
I can't eat it.
I can't eat it. You and me both, because they're bland. Because the water's warm.
Yeah.
And I learned that even in Hawaii, that if the water is too warm, then the fish have
I like oysters from the north.
Absolutely.
North, east coast.
Prince
north,
Edward Island coast, or up in Washington or something here.
Or even here.
Yeah.
On the
I do
north
not like
Pacific.
Gulf oysters, and they're huge down there, and I taste them. They're bigger than a door, but they're blander. They're, to me, tasteless.
All right. So now we went from food to bars to oyster bar. Go to pastries.
Oh, pastries.
There's a big trend in Paris for the last few years with a top pastry chef in the world and chocolate confectionists.
Chocolatiers.
Yeah, they make fantastic chocolate. But the pastries, you know, we used to have pastry shop all over the place. Was fine, you have beautiful croissants, beautiful eclairs of Saint-Honoré. Yeah. But now, it's so much refined with chefs that really elevated. You need to watch a show, and everyone should watch a show, from Eva LaGuardia.
From who?
Eva LaGuardia.
Oh, Eva Longoria. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, the actress from Desperate Housewives, right?
Was she?
Mm-hmm.
It's not my kind of show.
That's where she came to fame, Desperate Housewives.
So, she has a show of things on CNN, like Anthony Bourdain used to have. It's called Searching for France.
Searching for France. She's not French.
Oh, she lived in France. She was married to a French man for some time.
I didn't know that, because she's Hispanic, Eva Longoria.
Yeah, but she still has that fun accent and fun laugh. but she's very Francophile.
Okay.
And so
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she is French. I thought she was Hispanic.
She take you from different regions of France, Marseille, Lyon, Reims, Alsace, and Paris. So if you watch this, you know, searching for France.
Okay.
And it's unbelievable.
When I was a kid, French food was the ultimate, but it was expensive, it was heavy, it was very formal, you had to dress up, 57 forks and knives and white tablecloths and all the stuff and people in little bow ties and everything here. You know, it was just for rare occasions for the really wealthy. And then we got healthy in the 60s and 70s, and it was fattening, it was butter, it was milk, it was heavy creams.
Wow.
And that nouveau cuisine kept it alive and reinvented it. And now I think it's the word of the day is still fusion. Everything's fused together. It's a little bit of
fusion, and all things will come back. And I hope also the new generations, and if the parents knows, or maybe most of them don't know because they don't cook at home, you know, try to look at the etiquette.
The etiquette. Ooh, there's a word. When's the last time, everybody listening to the show, when's the last time you heard etiquette in a conversation anymore? We used to, manners in the Midwest.
It wasn't etiquette class.
Yeah, there was a class to it. There was manners. You didn't do this. You folded the napkin this way. You sat a certain way. You ate. You didn't just eat with your fingers or whatever. There was a certain way.
You don't cross the fork and the knife. You just, you know, start from the outside to the inside.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I still look at my grandsons and they look at me, just roll their eyes like they just grab it all and just start consuming like they're bears ripping stuff open.
So if we go back to the real way of to dine, and you know, to buy your food and prepare your food and join the table
and to eat it and to present it
and then take your time, have conversation between courses and things like that, you know, then we'll be all fine.
Well, we've lost a lot of that because we live in a world of fast food. I want to cook it fast. I want to eat it fast. Well, I don't sit together with everybody and eat it. We all eat at our own pace and our own time. It's Uber Eats. It's delivered.
This is one of my motto. You know, sit at the table, bring friends and family together, and cook for them, and everybody will be much happier.
There you go. From your lips to God's ears here. Maybe we live in a happier world if we could just take that simple step. That's kind of what this show is. We're savoring these things through you. Mm-hmm. We're remembering these things, that traditions that have been lost, and some of the fine dining cuisine that
dining could be cooking at home.
Could be. And more and more, I think that is where fine dining lives.
Because, you know, the enjoyment is to go out and shop for the best, and then you bring it home.
Yeah. Like the picture you there, you smelling whatever those are, truffles or something here, whatever you're smelling.
Mushrooms,
eh? Yeah. All right, well, great thing. I'm glad to hear it's still alive. I feared that the reverse influence of America is that we've commoditized everything, we've corporatized everything, and we've commercialized it and turned it into fast food, and in the process, or we've turned it into Disneyland touristy things that you just go and visit.
You know, if you really are into finding the right place, you have the options.
I certainly don't want to attack Disney, not in Orange County here.
No.
But we go to Disneyland, and I thought to myself, why would they open a theme park called California Adventure? We're in California. Go out and see the real California. Why do I have to make recreated versions here?
Normally,
fast version.
It is. Like the Epcot on the
Epcot
East Coast.
Right.
Here is to bring tourists in. Right. No, it's not really for the locals.
But right, so why would, so they come here and they think from Japan or from Asia or something, and this is what California is. No, just drive outside the gate and see it. It's go up and
down.
You
know, there was one ride I really like. Yeah.
What was that?
Flying California.
Flying California.
When you sit. And your seat move, and you're flying above California. That was very well done.
I don't think I remember that one. All right, so we're flying California.
Shikari.
Oh, we got the cards here.
Shikari. And then Boutique des Vins. So try to remember that. Shikari.
You know, when I was, I will go one more minute here. When I was a kid, we collected matchbooks as we ran around the country to restaurants. Of course, nobody smokes, so nobody has matches anymore. I wonder how many even have business cards. I don't even see business cards in restaurants anymore. So few places have them.
Yeah, but, you know, my wife and I, we collect coasters.
Coasters, okay.
Should I bring a coaster from the Aries Bar?
I wish you would. I would love that. Yeah. I've got some coasters over there. I'm into that, too.
I give you a keychain.
You did. He brought me a little thing. He got me a keychain. I was beating him up like a little 6-year-old. Come on, Daddy, you got to bring me something home from your trips. He brought me a little Eiffel Tower.
You made me laugh, though. Okay, he wanted an Eiffel Tower. Okay, fine. And then my friend.
That's all I think of when I think of France, the Eiffel Tower.
My wife found this one with a little baguette.
You got the Eiffel Tower. Somebody else came back and brought me. Say how corny I am. We had a guy who went to Italy, and I'm very Catholic. So he went to where Assisi, where Francis was. So he brought me the little statue of Francis of Assisi.
Saint Joseph, no?
This is Francis of Assisi, he went to Assisi in Italy. And I thought, you know, I'm a sucker for this stuff here. I have little planes from where I go. I have more tchotchkes, as they call them, in my house. Little trips, little thimbles and things.
Yeah, but you look at it and then kind of bring you a lot of memories.
I got a little bomber here from going to the air museums. I got all this stuff, and I got tons of these little toys in my studio here. Thank you for adding to it. Thank you for sharing your stories.
It's good to be back.
And good to have you back, and we'll get back on the horse. I know we've got some interesting guests coming up. I know you've got somebody, I've got you somebody scheduled who has one of these speakeasies. Mm-hmm. Knock at the door, and behind the door is like the old 20s place here. There's one that just opened up a lot of those. We're going to talk
sounds
about
good. I think I should visit it first.
We got to go first. Knock on the door. All right. Thanks for coming back and joining us, sharing what's out there. French cuisine is alive and well, and it's a living, breathing thing. It's changing and adapting as the world around it. It's going out to the world, now it's bringing back in the world.
Yes.
Fascinating stuff here. All right, there you go. A little sample of what's behind the kitchen door. There's still a lot of creativity taking place. It's not all just the same old, same old. And that's why we tell you to tune in each and every week, because the world is changing, maybe more than ever behind those kitchen doors. As we continue to go, not just around the county, but around the world, around the country, to share with our Chef Pascal what he's finding on his adventures. Right here on the adventure we call OC Talk Radio, our streaming station here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.
Check us on YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube. There we go.